This is The Gadget Had a Ghost, a novelette by Murray Leinster and read by Tom Weiss. Chapter 1. This was Istanbul, and the sounds of the city, motor cars and clumping donkeys, the nasal cries of peddlers, and the distant roar of a jet plane somewhere over the city came muted through the walls of Coughlin's flat. It was already late dusk, and Coughlin had just got back from the American college where he taught physics. He relaxed in his chair and waited. He was to meet Laurie later at the Hotel Petra on the improbably named Grand Rue de Petra and hadn't too much time to spare. But he was intrigued by the unexpected guest he had found waiting for him when he arrived. Duval, the Frenchman, haggard and frantic with impatience. Lieutenant Galil, calm and patient and impressive in the uniform of the Istanbul Police Department. Galil introduced himself with perfect courtesy and explained that he had come with Monsieur Duval to ask for information which only Mr. Coughlin of the American College could possibly give. They were now in Coughlin's sitting room. They had the iced drinks, which were formal hospitality. Coughlin waited. "I am afraid," said Lieutenant Galil wryly, "that you will think us mad, Mr. Coughlin." Duval drained his glass and said bitterly, "Surely I am mad. It cannot be otherwise." Coughlin raised sandy eyebrows at them. The Turkish lieutenant of police shrugged. "I think that what we wish to ask Mr. Coughlin is, have you by any chance been visiting the 13th century?" Coughlin smiled politely. Duval made an impatient gesture. "Pardon, Monsieur Coughlin. I apologize for our seeming insanity, but that is truly a serious question." This time, Coughlin grinned. "Then the answer's no, not lately. You evidently are aware that I teach physics at the college. My course turns out graduates who can make electrons jump through hoops, you might say. And the better students can stoop into the private lives of neutrons, but fourth dimension stuff? You refer to time travel, I believe. Well, that's out of my line." Lieutenant Galil sighed. He began to unwrap the bulky parcel that sat on his lap. A book appeared. It was large, more than 4 inches thick, and its pages were sheepskin. Its cover was heavy, ancient leather, so old that it was friable and inset in it with deeply carved ivory medallions. Coughlin recognized the style. They were Byzantine ivory carvings, somewhat battered, done in the manner of the days before Byzantium became successively Constantinople, and Istanbul, and Istanbul. "An early copy," observed Galil, "of a book called The Alexiad by the Princess Anna Komnena, from the 13th century I mentioned. Will you be so good to look at it, Mr. Coughlin?" He opened the volume very carefully and handed it to Coughlin. The thick, yellowed pages were covered with those graceless Greek characters which, without capitals or divisions between words or any punctuation or paragraphing, were the text of books when they had just ceased to be written on long strips and rolled up on sticks. Coughlin regarded it curiously. "Do you, by any chance, read Byzantine Greek?" asked the Turk, hopefully. Coughlin shook his head. The police lieutenant looked depressed. He began to turn pages while Coughlin held the book. The very first page stood up stiffly. There was brown, crackled adhesive around its edge, evidence that at some time it had been glued to the cover and lately had been freed. The top half of the formerly hidden sheet was now covered by a blank letterhead of the Istanbul Police Department, clipped in place by modern metal paper clips. On the uncovered part of the page, the bottom half, there were five brownish smudges that somehow looked familiar, four in a row and a larger one beneath them. Lieutenant Galil offered a pocket magnifying glass. "Will you examine?" he asked. Coughlin looked. After a moment, he raised his head. "They're fingerprints," he agreed. "What of it?" Duval stood up and abruptly began to pace up and down the room as if filled with frantic impatience. Lieutenant Galil drew a deep breath. "I'm about to say the absurd," he said ruefully. "Monsieur Duval came upon this book in the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris. It has been owned by the library for more than 100 years. Before, it was owned by the Coma de Vis, who in the 16th century were the patrons of a man known as Nostradamus. But the book itself is of the 13th century, written and bound in Byzantium. In the Bibliothèque Nationale, Monsieur Duval observed that a leaf was glued tightly. He loosened it. He found those fingerprints and other writing. Coughlin said, most interesting, thinking that he should be leaving for his dinner engagement with Laurie and her father. Of course, said the police officer, Monsieur Duval suspected a hoax. He had the ink examined chemically, then spectroscopically. But there could be no doubt. The fingerprints were placed there when the book was new. I repeat, there can be no doubt. Coughlin had no inkling of what was to come. He said puzzledly, fingerprinting is pretty modern stuff, so I suppose it's remarkable to find prints so old, but... Duval, facing up and down, uttered a stifled exclamation. He stopped by Coughlin's desk. He played feverishly with a wooden-handled Kurdish dagger that Coughlin used as a letter opener, his eyes a little wild. Lieutenant Galil said resignedly, "The fingerprints are not remarkable, Mr. Coughlin. They are impossible. I assure you that, considering their age alone, they are quite impossible. And that is so small, so trivial, an impossibility compared to the rest. You see, Mr. Coughlin, those fingerprints are yours." While Coughlin sat staring rather intently at nothing at all, the Turkish lieutenant of police brought out a small fingerprint pad, the kind used in up-to-date police departments. No need for ink. One presses one's fingers on the pad, and the prints develop of themselves. "If I may show you." Coughlin let him roll the tips of his fingers on the glossy top sheet of the pad. It was a familiar enough process. Coughlin had had his fingerprints taken when he got his passport for Turkey and again when he registered as a resident alien with the Istanbul Police Department. The Turk offered the magnifying glass again. Coughlin studied the thumbprint he had just made. After a moment's hesitation, he compared it with the thumbprint on the sheepskin. He jumped visibly. He checked the other prints, one by one, with increasing care and incredulity. Presently, he said in a tone of one who does not believe in his own words, they do seem to be alike, except for... "Yes," said Lieutenant Galil. "The thumbprint on the sheepskin shows a scar that your thumb does not now have. But still, it is your fingerprint, that and all the others. It is both philosophically and mathematically impossible for two sets of fingerprints to match unless they come from the same hand." "These do," observed Coughlin. Duval muttered unhappily to himself. He put down a Kurdish knife and paced again. Galler shrugged. "Monsieur Duval observed these prints," he exclaimed, "quite 3 months ago, the prints and the writing. It took some time to be convinced that the matter was not a hoax. He wrote to the Istanbul police to ask if their record showed a Thomas Coughlin residing at 750 Fatima. 2 months ago." Coughlin jumped again. "Where'd he get that address?" "You will see," said the Turk. "I repeat that this was 2 months ago. I replied that you were registered, but not at that address." He wrote again, forwarding a photograph of part of that sheepskin page and asking agitatedly if those were your fingerprints. I replied that they were, save for the scar on the thumb. And I added with lively curiosity that 2 days previously you had mentioned to 750 Fatima, the address Monsieur Duval mentioned a month previously. Unfortunately, said Coughlin, that just couldn't happen. I didn't know the address myself until a week before I moved. I am aware that it could not have happened, said Galil painfully. My point is that it did. You're saying, objected Coughlin, that somebody had information 3 weeks before it existed? Galil made a wry face. That is a masterpiece of understatement. It is madness, said Duval hoarsely. It is lunacy. Ce n'est pas logique. Be so kind, Monsieur Coughlin, as to regard the rest of the page. Coughlin pulled off the clips that held the police department letterhead over the top of the parchment page, and he immediately wondered if his hair was really standing on end. There was writing there. He saw words in faded, unbelievably ancient ink. It was modern English script. The handwriting was as familiar to Coughlin as his own, which it was. It said, C. Thomas Coughlin, 750 Fatima, Istanbul. Professor? President? So what? Gadget at 80 Hossein, second floor, back room. Make sure of Menard to be killed. Underneath, his fingerprints remained visible. Coughlin stared at the sheet. He found his glass and gulped at it. On more mature consideration, he drained it. The situation seemed to call for something of the sort. There was silence in the room save for the drowsy signs of the night outside. They were not all drowsy at that. There were voices, and somewhere a radio emitted that nasal masculine howling which to the Turkish ear is music. Uninhibited taxi cabs, an unidentifiable jingling, an intonation of speech, all made the sound that of Istanbul and no other place of earth. Moreover, there were the sounds of Istanbul at nightfall. Duval was still. Galil looked at Coughlin and was silent, and Coughlin stared at the sheet of ancient parchment. He faced the completely inexplicable, and he had to accept it. His name and present address, no puzzle if Coughlin simply lied. The line about Laurie's father, Menard, implied that he was in danger of some sort. But it didn't mean much because of its vagueness. The line referring to another address, 80 Hossein, and a gadget was wholly without any meaning at all. But the line about professor, president, that hit hard. It was what Coughlin told himself whenever he thought of Laurie. He was a mere instructor in physics. As such, it would not be a good idea for him to ask Laurie to marry him. In time, he might become a professor. Even then, it would not be a good idea to ask the daughter of an umpty millionaire to marry him. In more time with the breaks, he might become a college president. The odds were astronomically against it, but it could happen. Then what? He'd last in that high estate until a college board of trustees decided that somebody else might be better at begging for money. All in all, then, too darn few prospects to justify his ever asking Laurie to marry him. Only an instructor, with a professorship the likely peak of his career, and a presidency of a college something almost unimaginable. So, when Coughlin thought of Laurie, he said sourly to himself, Professor? President? So what? And was reminded not to yield to any inclination to be romantic. But he had not said that four-word phrase to anybody on earth. He was the only human being to whom it would mean anything at all. It was absolute proof that he, Thomas Coughlin, had written those words. But he hadn't. He swallowed. That's my handwriting, he said carefully. And I have to suppose that I wrote it. But I have no memory of doing so. I'd be much obliged if you'd tell me what this is all about. Duval burst into frantic speech. That is what I've come to demand of you, Monsieur Coughlin. I have been a sane man. I have been a student of the Byzantine Empire and its history. I am an authority upon it. But this, modern English written when there was no modern English, Arabic numerals when Arabic numerals of that form were unknown, house numbers when they did not exist, in the city of Istanbul when there was no city of that name on earth. I could not rest, Monsieur Coughlin. I demand of you, what is the meaning of this? Coughlin looked again at the faded brown writing on the parchment. Duval abruptly collapsed, buried his face in his hands. Galil carefully crushed out his cigarette. He waited. Coughlin stood up with a certain deliberation. I think we could do with another drink. He gathered up the glasses and left the room, but he did not find that his mind grew any clearer. He found himself wishing that Duval and Galil had never been born to bring a puzzle like this into his life. He hadn't written that message, but nobody else could have, and it was written. It suddenly occurred to him that he had no idea what the message referred to or what he should do about it. He went back into the living room with the refilled glasses. Duval still sat with his head in his hands. Galil had another cigarette going, was regarding its ash with an expression of acute discomfort. Coughlin put down the drinks. I don't see how anyone else could have written that message, he observed. But I don't remember writing it myself, and I've no idea what it means. Since you brought it, you must have some idea.
No, said Galil. My first question was the only sane one I can ask. Have you been traveling in the 13th century? I gather that you have not. I even feel that you have no plans of the sort.
At least no plans, agreed Coughlin with irony. I know of nowhere I am less likely to visit.
Galil waved his cigarette, and the ash fell off. As a police officer, there is a mention of someone to be killed, possibly murdered. That makes it my affair. As a student of philosophy, it is surely my affair.
In both police work and in philosophy, it is sometimes necessary to assume the absurd in order to reason toward the sensible.
I would like to do so now.
By all means, said Coughlin dryly.
At the moment, then, said Galil, with a second wave of his cigarette, you have as yet no anticipation of any attempt to murder Mr. Menard. You have no scar upon your thumb, nor any expectation of one. And the existence of, let us say, a gadget at Eddie Hossein is not in your memory, right?
Quite right, admitted Coughlin.
Now, if you are to acquire a scar, observed Galil, you will make or have made, I must add, those fingerprints at some time in the future when you will know of danger to Mr. Menard and of a gadget at Eddie Hossein.
This, monsieur, protested Duval bitterly.
But it is logic, said Galil calmly. The only flaw is that it is not common sense.
Logically, then, one concludes that at some time in the future, Mr. Coughlin will know these things and will wish to inform himself in what is now the present of them. He will wish, perhaps next week, to inform himself today that there is danger to Mr. Menard and that there is something of significance at Eddie Hossein on the second floor in the back room. So he will do so. And this memorandum on the flyleaf of this very ancient book will be the method by which he informs himself.
Coughlin said, but you don't believe that.
I do not admit that I believe it, said Coughlin with a smile. But I think it would be wise to visit Eddie Hossein. I cannot think of anything else to do.
Why not tell Menard about all this? Said Coughlin dryly.
He would think me insane, said the Turk just as dryly, and with reason. In fact, I suspect it myself.
I'll tell him, said Coughlin, for what it's worth. I'm having dinner with him and his daughter tonight. It will make small talk at least.
He looked at his watch. I really should be leaving now.
Lieutenant Galil rose politely. Duval took his head from his hands and stood up also, looking more haggard now than at the beginning of the talk. Something occurred to Coughlin.
Tell me, he said curiously. Monsieur Duval, when you first found this book, what made you loosen a glued-down page?
Duval spread out his hands. Galil turned back the cover again and put the flyleaf flat. On what had been the visible side, there was a note, a gloss, of 5 or 6 lines. It was in an informal sort of Greek lettering and unintelligible to Coughlin. But judging by its placement, it was a memo by some previous owner of the book rather than any contribution of the copyist.
My translator and Monsieur Duval agree, observed Galil. They say it says, this book has traveled to the frigid beyond and returned bearing writing of the adepts who ask news of Apollonius.
I do not know what that means, nor did Monsieur Duval, but he searched for other writings.
When he saw a page glued down, he loosened it. And you know what has resulted.
Coughlin said vexedly, I wouldn't know what an adept is, and I can hardly guess what a frigid beyond is, or a warm one either. But I do know an Apollonius. I think he's a Greek, but he calls himself a Neoplatonist, as if that were a nationality, and says he hails from somewhere in Arabia. He's trying to get Menard to finance some sort of political shenanigan, but he won't be referred to, not 7 centuries ago.
You were, said Galil.
And Mr. Menard.
And Eddie Hossein.
I think Monsieur Duval and myself will investigate that address and see if it solves the mystery or deepens it. Duval suddenly shook his head. No, he said with a sort of pathetic violence. This affair is not possible. To think of it invites madness. Mr. Coughlin, let us thrust all this from our minds. Let us abandon it. I ask your pardon for my intrusion. I had hoped to find an explanation which could be believed. I abandoned hope and the attempt. I shall go back to Paris and deny to myself that any of this has ever taken place. Coughlin did not believe him, said nothing. I hope, said Galil mildly, that you may reconsider. He moved toward the door with the Frenchman in tow. To abandon all inquiry at this stage would be suicidal. Coughlin said, suicidal? For one, admitted Galil ruefully, I should die of curiosity. He waved his hand and went out, pushing Duval, and Coughlin began to dress for his dinner with Laurie and her father at the Hotel Petra. But as he dressed, his forehead continually creased into a scowl of somehow angry puzzlement.